The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Fever Take Football Daily. Yes, the pod touches down in Poland and Ukraine. Zs and Dobry, madam, for 3 weeks of top continental action today. Day one. Russia got their moves like Jaguar as they stormed to the top of the group. Meanwhile, in Warsaw, it's a typical Greece-Pole contest as no one comes out the winner. We savour the opening day flavour, then preview all the Saturday action. It is Germany-Portugal and Netherlands-Denmark with extra Leander Scherlakens. Woof. All coming up in Euro 2012 Football Daily. Well, here we are, and I must say, it's a lovely day here in Wroclaw. Joining me here, nice face paint, Barry.
Hello, Jimbo.
You've come to party.
Yes, and I've got a big plate of sausage dumplings and tripe.
Care for a dumpling, Mr. Paul Doyle?
Go on, then.
Hey, and alongside him, sharing a mic in the kind of fraternal fashion that this kind of Euro competition inspires, Paul McInnes.
Oh, yeah, I've only got half an hour before my easy yet, though, so...
Oh, right, OK. Well, we'll crack on. Not far from crack off. Not far enough, some would say. Hey, tell you what, we got our first look at Group A, which has been kind of billed as the big enigma of this tournament. Nobody really knew what was going to happen, but they were pretty sure that it wasn't going to involve many goals. Huh. So much for that, eh, Paul Doyle?
Yeah, well, I actually thought it would involve a lot of goals.
Ooh.
In fact, I placed a tidy sum on Alexander Kirtsakov to be the tournament's top scorer.
How did that work out for you?
Well, he became the first player in the history of the European Championships to get 7 shots off target in a single match.
Bless.
The reason I backed Kirtsakov was because I knew they would create a lot of chances, because they're very fluent and inventive going forward when they're in the mood, which at times in tonight's match they didn't seem to be. They're kind of they've got an odd mentality. They just switch off for long periods, which could be punished later in the tournament, but the Czechs simply weren't good enough to punish them. However, when they were in their groove, they were excellent going forward, with the likes of Jaguev and Arshavin pulling the strings. And Pavlyuchenko, when he came on, looked really strong up front and will probably start instead of Kirtsakov.
Interesting. Ben Stanley says, question for Football Daily. Does Arsene Wenger have grounds to take legal action against Arshavin?
No. Would be the simple answer, wouldn't it? And he does appear to have found his form and his confidence and his character again since going back home. And I think there's always been that suggestion, because he had an abortive spell in France early on in his career, didn't he? At Auxerre, something like that, Arshavin. And he went back home and played well at Zenit and then came abroad again. I think he's a bit of a homebody. But like Paul was saying, when he was in the mood, so were Russia.
Barry, what do you think?
Well, it's like you say, it was a sort of an enigmatic group. And say, if Group A was a poker table, it would be very hard to, before any of the matches tonight, it would have been incredibly difficult to get a decent read on any of the players.
What kind of cards have Russia laid down on this poker table now?
I'd say they've laid down a pair of pocket kings, maybe. They've been really good, but we've seen this before from them. They were superb in Euro 2008, really fluid, slick passing, fast. And then didn't qualify for World Cup 2010 after that aberration of a playoff against Slovenia, in which several of their players are reported to have gone on the lash the night before one of the games. And so there's no doubt that they had a lot of potential, which they may realise in this tournament. Whether or not they'll be good enough to win it remains to be seen. But Arshavin was superb. Their whole midfield was superb. Denisov, Shurikov, Zyryanov, all excellent.
Got a decent backup keeper as well?
Yeah, my only concern would be how good the Czech Republic were as opposition. I wasn't particularly impressed with them at all.
Mind you, they put 3 past Italy the other day.
Well, yeah. That was a pre-tournament friendly. And yeah. They defended terribly, the Czechs. And even then, at 2-1, when they scored a nice goal themselves, the Czechs, another really nice through ball. They were mugging them, the Russians, in the centre of the park the whole time, and the Czechs looked the most effective on the counter-attack. I think it's something whereby, but as Paul was saying, if they don't have their concentration not for 90 minutes, which they don't tend to do, then they are going to leave themselves open to getting picked off. And despite the bad defending, they missed a lot of chances, the Russians.
All right. But apart from that tendency to switch off, anything else
Any other weaknesses?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think the fullbacks maybe, but I think the centre half pairings look really good. Yeah. The keeper looks strong, and as we already said, the midfield play very well together, and they know each other very well as well.
Absolutely. So, next up for Russia, will it be a sterner test, I wonder, as they take on Poland? We saw Poland today. They took on the Greeks, the new national stadium in Warsaw. The stadium wasn't ruthless, and neither was either team's performance in a 1-1 draw. What should we say about this? The Poles had that game. It looked like they had that game in the bag, didn't they, in the first half?
Well, I think a draw was probably a fair result. The Poles could and should have had it wrapped up by half-time. Their tactics were so sort of obvious that even I was able to predict before the game that they'd be attacking down the right with their full-back Pizek and, what's his name, Blazkowski.
Blazkowski.
Crossing into Robert Lewandowski, the Borussia Dortmund trio. And that's proceeded to be exactly what happened. They were attacking down the right again and again and again, and that's where their goals came from. And I mean, people were expecting a cagey opening game between two teams, and I'd say most of us don't know a great deal about. But it was really exciting. Goalkeeping blunders, two fairly identical goals, sendings off. And
The referee, more unwanted ref than the Cardiff City club shop, surely. And you have to say, give a little bit of credit to Greece, even if the IMF don't want to, he said, strike at the top of the nose. Because they really came back into this game. And big thumbs up for that Salpagidis fella.
Yeah, well, just take your sort of points one by one.
Right.
The referee was... He had a reasonably good game, but his decision to send off Papastathopoulos was ridiculous. He got sent off for two yellow cards in fairly quick succession. The first shouldn't have been a booking at all. He was booked for a fair challenge. And the second, possibly a free kick for obstruction, but no way should he have got a yellow card. So he was justifiably angry to get sent off. So at that stage, Greece were a goal down and a man down. Their manager was going crazy. But due to certain Arsenal goalkeeper having the mother of all shockers, Greece were able to get back into it and could have won it with a penalty in the second half, which Georgios Karagounis missed.
He did, didn't he?
What did you think about that penalty? Do you think Chesney had a choice?
Rather, it was saved rather than he missed it.
Well, he didn't score.
All right, then.
I consider that a miss.
But you say they could have won it. They should have won it anyway, because Salpagidis had a perfectly good goal ruled out for an inexistent offside, didn't he?
I think Gary Craster was offside, wasn't it?
There was an offside in it. The substitute who had just come on was offside.
But, all right. But a thumbs up Salpagidis. Big thumbs down for Chesney, then.
And do you think he had a choice with the penalty?
Well, you always have a choice.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think... I mean, he either stood out of the way and let him score... Or made an attempt.
Or made a well-timed tackle.
Okay.
And he failed to do that.
Plus, his goalkeeping on the Polish goal was...
Oh, yeah, the goalkeeping on the Polish goal was terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering about that, if it's saying he had a terrible performance in general, as opposed to one moment of madness.
Oh, I see. All right. Paul, what did you do? What conclusion did you draw from this game?
Going forward, Greece showed... the merit of attacking, as every team in the tournament has shown so far. It's been a very open tournament so far. Greece set out originally to play quite defensively, but because they fell behind, they had to change that. So at the moment, it looks like it will fall to England and Ireland to drag the tournament down from that point of view. Maybe they'll be inspired.
Yeah, nice one.
I think on the evidence of that game, neither of those teams will be troubling the later stages of the tournament.
Yeah.
And Greece claim that they're not defensive and that this tag that dogged them ever since they won the final in 2004 of being really dour and turgid is unfair, and it is unfair because that defence was good and the one they have at the moment is an absolute shambles.
Ka-ching. Right. Yeah. What about
DJ Karmatronic's performance on the decks in the opening ceremony?
That was quite some shirt, wasn't it?
Yeah. He can be this year's Hadaway.
Yeah. If
He's
only
probably
he
familiar
special.
With his work. He's Italian.
Who? DJ Technotronic.
DJ Karmatronic.
Karmatronic, sorry.
He rocked the Euro opening ceremony.
He certainly did,
didn't he? On the steel wheels playing Platters That Matter.
What I thought, since we're now clearly in a discussion about the opening ceremony, what I thought was really impressive was the ball skills displayed by the Chopin-playing Hungarian pianist.
He managed three keepy uppies.
Yeah, and then picked it up.
He dropped it on his neck.
Yeah, but all the same.
Three.
You don't really think that, do you? You want us to say Diana Ross.
At the World Cup in 94.
Exactly, James, yeah. No, I agree 100%.
Right. No, I didn't think it was that bad. What did you make of it?
Of the opening ceremony,
yeah,
as a moment of fate and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it was brief.
They're all the same. It was brief.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the fact the Swedish kid had his hair kind of dyed in a like bright yellow and in a kind of manga style. I liked the way the piano transformed into a stadium.
Yes.
At the end, that was quite... I've never seen that happen before. And it was a very big stadium, very big piano, rather.
It was.
Com Stadium.
Right.
Which had enough room to put some CDJ decks in for DJ Karmatronic.
Karmatronic. There were a lot of people who weren't particularly indigenous. I'm hearing that DJ Karmatronic's Italian, and there was a Hungarian fellow tinkling those ivories.
But they were playing Chopin, weren't they?
They were playing Chopin.
Polish,
yeah.
Apparently.
Okay.
Although somebody was saying to me that he was Hungarian. I mean, I don't know. I don't care.
Sorry?
I don't like classical music.
What's that?
I don't like classical music.
I thought I tuned into the Chopin channel for a
while. Yeah, it was a bit...
But Scott Murray's written a very good column about the opening ceremony, which you can see online or, I think, in tomorrow's paper.
Is he being rude about it? I do hope not.
Phrases like dark mine of bland focus group mediocrity, bison grass vodka...
What do we think of
corporate prattle detector, hugging his knees and sobbing.
I thought it was actually not too bad.
Cold lamé onesie.
It had that hint of otherness... You know, the strange Karmatronic DJ fella in his gold shirt. But in all, it was that nice blend of comforting football, kind of generic UEFA tournament style, and a bit of foreign weirdness. I quite like it. It was a bit like, the summer Europop hit that makes its way over to these shores.
Foreign weirdness, what about the logo itself?
What?
With the flowering football, which looks like something, either a tumour.
Also, I'm still so... shocked by that extraordinary barge event that recently took place in London. Any other kind of reasonably simple and
are you
and
a Republican
executed?
Or something?
Huh?
Are you a Republican or something? Why do you keep being down on the Queen's Jubilee?
I'm not down on the Queen's Jubilee as an event.
Do you know how long she's been serving our country for? 60 years.
I've got nothing against anyone, Paul.
Okay.
Except the people who produced that hemorrhage of a...
But the boat turned around a full circle.
Yeah. Quite extraordinary. Also, later on, a man pressed a button and a bridge raised.
Yeah.
Think of the pressure. Now, your corner, listeners, to have your say on Euro 2012. Tweet or post in every day. And you, like Chas Wazza, could say erudite things like Lineker and co. not in Poland, Ukraine. Spars it a bit for TV coverage. What do you think about that then?
I don't
Does
care where they are.
Delegitimise them, do you think? The fact that they're not actually out here like us?
Possibly. Well, Alan Shearer's out there.
Is he?
Yeah.
It's a good reason for them to not be.
Somebody, I was watching the Alan Shearer thing, and I was very impressed by him.
Why, what was he doing?
He was out there on the pitch before the game talking about doing the Gareth Southgate thing, and he was really animated. He was very excited.
I think someone's had a word. He was very animated. He was able to pronounce players' names, Polish players' names, which is not easy, and I can't do it properly.
Hmm.
And my defence would be that that's the only thing he has to do.
Right.
I'm busy doing other things.
Clearly, yeah.
And he was able to, like, say things that they would do and be right, which is a huge improvement on his normal performance. Okay. Normally he can't do any of those things at all.
Okay. So he's basically a roving man for the Beeb, is he?
Well, no, he was out there with Jake Humphrey, Mr. F1, but they were... Well, the thing I wanted to say, and it's apropos of not very much, but as I kind of tweeted about this, and somebody tweeted back to me with a picture of Alan Shearer from behind, obviously in the stadium from that day, kind of just like paparazzi shot. And I was like, where is this person? Is this person stalking Alan Shearer? How did they get that photograph? Is Alan in danger?
But anyway... This is the winningest Euro Championship ever. 9 previous winners are there, and the 16 nations represented. It's interesting, isn't it? Top lineup of teams. We've got some very big teams coming up on Saturday, Paul Doyle. Holland and Denmark. Talk about that in a second. And Germany and Portugal. Oh, yes. The Germans perfect in qualifying. They've besmirched their record a little bit of late with one or two friendly flutters. The Swiss defeat, of course. But hey.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be interested to see if the Portuguese manager, Paulo Bento, has the bottle to play Cristiano Ronaldo as a striker, ooh, which is clearly where he should be, given the paucity of other options that Portugal have there. And Ronaldo is more replaceable on the wing. They have several good wingers, and they've nobody up front. They'll probably have Almeida, is it up front?
Helder Postiga has been mentioned.
Yeah, and they have trouble scoring goals. They don't have any trouble creating chances to score, but they don't have someone who can put the ball in the back of the net with any regularity, other than Ronaldo, who insists on being further back and being the conduit of everything. Everywhere, all over the pitch, as the captain and messiah of the nation.
Does he ever play as a centre forward?
Carlos Queiroz tried it several years ago for the same reason, because their striking problems have been enduring. And after two games, Ronaldo got fed up and was moved back. But he basically plays there for Real Madrid, almost, you know, just behind Benzema.
Right.
But certainly much more advanced than he tends to be for Portugal.
You'd like Paulo Bento to think outside the box, ironically. Enough. Portugal on a bit of a rotten run of form. Only one win in their last six scores. A lot of those would be pre-tournament friendlies. But this is Ronaldo's fifth major championship. We're still kind of waiting for him to really take a tournament by the scruff of its neck.
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant in 2006.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought he was very good in that tournament. Was it 2004 when they played England and he had that memorable duel with Ashley Cole? Both of them were superb. And it was very exciting watching them go at each other. Was it?
Right, no. Producer Ben suggests that was the winking. That was 2006.
Yeah.
Right. When you say it was memorable, clearly not so very much. But
the details of it weren't memorable.
Yeah, okay. No, all right. Well, that's possibly I'm being unfair when I say that he hasn't really shone as yet. But there's a lot of, as usual, there's a lot of weight for him to carry. There's Nani, of course.
Yeah, yeah? There's Nani, there's Moraes, there's other players who get creative going forward. But I think that's the thing about Ronaldo, isn't it? I mean, it's both his strength and his flaw. He wants everything to go through him. So that kind of detracts away from the other strengths they have in the side. And it also means he's never going to play up front because he's not going to do the things that are selfless and the hard things, the unglamorous things. Mm.
Whereas the Germans are perhaps the most complete outfit in Poland and Ukraine. They're a fantastic starting 11 and a very, very impressive bench.
Well, on the subject of that starting 11, it'll also be interesting to see who they play up front. Because Klose, of course, has this superb record in major tournaments. He's getting on a bit. But I'd still say he's a more reliable finisher than Mario Gomez, who, despite scoring a lot of goals this season, has missed an almost Kerzakov amount of chances.
Really?
We know this. Could you say this from Vienna?
I want to know what the little blue book that you've opened up in front of you is, Barry. Is it your diary?
It's my notes.
Oh, OK.
I've been busy the last
couple. All right. You have been busy. It's packed. What does it say?
It looks like a notebook that might have fallen out of Indiana Jones's satchel, and that if you were able to interpret the clues contained within, you would find great treasure, which would turn out to just be metaphorical treasure,
right?
And really worthless.
Well, in some ways, worth even more than real shiny treasure.
Well, I don't think so.
Okay. What does it say, Barry?
It says, there's some stats here. Germany, for, you know, all their marvellousnesses, they concede a lot of goals.
Do they?
They scored 3 and conceded 2 on average per game in their run-up to the tournament and in qualification. Portugal scored 2, conceded 1 per game on average. So the statistics would suggest that tomorrow will be goal-tastic. But by the same token, the statistics would have suggested that today would not have been goal-tastic at all. And so, lies, damn lies, and statistics.
It'd be interesting, of course, they got Philipp Lahm, who did such a fantastic job against Cristiano Ronaldo, Paul, in the recent Champions League semi-final.
Indeed.
Will he be following him all over the field, do you think? He'll jink across the left and Lahm will follow him, and then Ronaldo will slip across back to the right. Lahm will be there too.
Be like Mary, Mary. Mary had a little lamb, and everywhere. So Ronaldo had a little lamb, and everywhere Ronaldo went, the lamb was sure to go. You don't get this kind of gold on zonal marking. Just arrows.
Okay. That's Germany-Portugal anyway, which is coming up on Saturday. Also on Saturday, it is Holland-Denmark. Wow, all sorts of things to talk about here. How good are the Dutch? How good are the Danes? Nicholas Bittner. And, my word, did they really get monkey chance at the first Dutch Open training session? Let's now dial up friend of the pod, Leander Scherlakens, to talk about all of that. Leander, thanks so much for joining us. You must be very, very excited.
Why exactly? For tomorrow's Holland game?
Euro 2012. You're taking on Nicholas Bentner and his crazy Danish cohorts tomorrow.
Yeah, I probably would be a bit more excited if I were more optimistic for Holland's chances, but unfortunately I'm not, because
Why?
As usual, the defense is a huge issue.
Is this young Johnny Mathis bloke who they've drafted in?
Joris Matthijssen.
That's the one.
Yeah, he's out tomorrow, so instead it's going to be Ron Vlaar.
Right.
And the left back is going to be an 18-year-old with two senior caps, all of which he's accrued in the last few weeks.
But surely with De Jong and Van Bommel doing defensive duties ahead of them in the midfield, the lads at the back will hardly have to worry.
Well, the trouble is, when you have De Jong and Van Bommel so dependent on to help out with the defense, it really... I mean, De Jong's really one-way player anyway, but it limits Van Bommel's ability to help out on offense, so it becomes two blocks, essentially, in the field, where you've got six defenders and four attackers. And as any tactical novice could tell you, that tends not to work.
Right. It's a classic fragmented team, isn't it? That's interesting, because I was a bit curious as to why a Holland team or Netherlands team that was World Cup finalists in 2010 that sailed through qualifying, scoring more goals than anybody else, wasn't being rated in quite the same terms as, say, Germany and Spain. But you're saying there are serious issues at the back then?
There were serious issues in 2010, in fairness, and the defense held up fairly well. And Matthijssen, actually, who is very much a weak link, actually, although not as weak as his replacement, held up until that very last bit of the finals where he got sent off, I believe. But, there is a sense around the Netherlands that maybe this team isn't quite as strong as it was in 2010. Sneijder is obviously coming off a season where he hasn't been very good at all. Really, since Mourinho has left Inter Milan, he hasn't been the same. Van Persie, of course, has had a wonderful season, but he's never really as good for the national team as he is for Arsenal. And they still haven't really found a spot for Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, our second most informed striker.
Right. And it's a straight choice between one or the other?
It appears so, yeah, because, I mean, let's face it, it's Holland. They're not going to go away from the 4-3-3. So the way the front line is shaping up is going to be Ibrahim Afellay on the left, Arjen Robben on the right, and Van Persie in between them with Wesley Sneijder in a playmaking role.
Right. Well, the Danish game is a big one. This, presumably, with the teams coming up, this is where they need to put some points on the board.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if Holland doesn't get 3 points from this game, they're in big, big, big trouble. You know, nobody has to explain the traditional rivalry with Germany, and Germany is ever so strong this year. And Portugal has a habit of beating Holland. They knocked them out of Euro 2004. They knocked them out of World Cup 2006. They always seem to do well against Holland. And I'm quite fearful of this left back, Jetro Willems, the 18-year-old, having to face Cristiano Ronaldo.
Mm, yeah, interesting question. In the meantime, loads of headlines about Holland's training session and the reported racist abuse from the crowd. And there seemed to be some confusion even within the Dutch camp about whether there had been monkey chants and the like from people in the stands.
It's a funny situation. Mark Van Bommel swears that he heard from a contingent of roughly 200 fans out of 20,000 that were there, monkey noises being made at the black players on the Dutch team. That seemed to be pulled into question a little bit by the press after training when he pointed it out, which seemed to irk him even more. The Dutch newspapers don't seem to be up in arms about it, and it is a little strange because, again, none of the reporters seem to have heard it. I don't know what side of the field they were on, but he swears that this is what happened. The head of the Dutch delegation at the Euro has said if it happens one more time, there'll be no more open training. And there's a funny reaction where Ruud Gullit, who of course was a great one of the first real well-known advocates of Nelson Mandela, said what a terrible shame it is that now we're talking about racism again, whilst Hans van Breukelen, the goalkeeper in 1988 when Holland won it all, said the biggest mistake you could possibly make is actually react to this racist stuff. The players are there to perform, not to fight racism, which I found a bit of a dubious thing to say as well.
Mm. Yeah, it is an interesting position they're in, and Van Marwijk seemed to be contradicting Van Bommel in a press conference when the issue was raised afterwards. Sorry, Barry, you...
Well, it's just, I've seen footage on the BBC News, and it's clearly audible monkey chanting. I mean, I don't know how anyone could argue that it's anything other than that, apart from UEFA, who of course would argue that the moon was made of blue cheese if they thought it would take the heat off them. But
and the players then moved across to the other side of the pitch to continue their training to get away from
Yes, but now Van Marwijk and Van Bommel openly disagreed with each other in a press conference. Van Bommel insisted he had heard monkey chanting. Van Marwijk said, well, you know, who's to know what it was. I think he was just being diplomatic, maybe, because he didn't want to upset the locals. But, yeah, it's very strange. Now it looks as the Dutch, who are famous for their infighting, may now embark on some fractious infighting over whether or not they were racially abused by other people. Yeah. You couldn't make it up.
That's why I suspect it's being played down a little bit, because I think that they don't want to cause a distraction. No official complaint has been lodged. But at the same time, it's a very strange scenario where you're leaving your captain out to dry, and are not in so many words, but essentially saying he's a liar. It will be really interesting to see how the team reacts to this.
Well, you've got to look out for those Danes, haven't you? Ninth ranked in the FIFA World Rankings. They topped their group. They got that Nicholas Bendtner, who's on fire. Barry?
Well, I really fancy the Danes to do well in this tournament, and I've been openly scoffed for saying that I backed Nicholas Bendtner to be top scorer at nearly 200-1. But I think I can make a decent case for him. He's fit, he's in form, he's got a good international scoring record. We all know he's a bit of a flute, but he's going to start. He will be playing in front of an excellent midfield, manned mainly by Christian Eriksen, who I think will be one of the players of the tournament, and I think he'll get lots of chances. And
he'll need them.
Well, there is that. I'm convinced Nicholas Gebentner is a good footballer, and that he will come good at some point. There's every chance it might be at this tournament. I expect Denmark to get out of the group, and I think they could go as far as the semi-finals. After that, who knows? So that almost certainly means Denmark will lose all three of their group games to nil. Nicholas Bendtner will make a holy show of himself again, and I'll look a complete moron again. But, you know, does it matter?
Your prediction, Paul Dahl, Barry to look a complete moron by this time tomorrow?
Never. If Denmark do get out of the group, then there's every chance they could go all the way to the final.
Well, that's true.
I don't think they will, though.
No. All right. If they do get out of the group, they're only one game away from the semis, and they'll have played some of the toughest teams around anyway, aren't they? Wouldn't they? Haven't they? Something like that. Anyway, Paul.
Did they? Yes. Who do I think will get out of that group?
No, well, I mean, if you like. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? A quick couple of predictions, that kind of thing?
Well, I suspect...
Just remind you, it's Germany-Portugal.
Thank you.
And Holland-Denmark.
Thank you. I'm to be honest, I'm just going to go for the favourites in this group.
Yeah,
both time.
Germany.
And Holland, I think.
And Holland again, yeah, right, okay.
I just the limitations of both... I'm not entirely sure that I think the Germans are overhyped. You know, they haven't won anything as a unit. They've done well up until certain points and not gone any further. That might happen to them again, but I still think their limitations and those of the Dutch are lesser than the other two teams in that group.
Right. Okay, then. That certainly got me all fired up to see them in action tomorrow, then. And we'll be back with, or later today, perhaps, for you, listener. We'll be back on Saturday... Well, late Saturday evening with another Football Daily. Make sure you join us for that and get your questions and comments in to the Football Daily comments section under the line or at AC Jimbo on Twitter. Ooh. See you all tomorrow. Many thanks to Barry Glendinning, Paul Dahl and Paul McInnes and producer Ben. And bye for now.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.